This is the Championship Chat Podcast, your home of news, views and debate from England's second tier.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Championship Chat Podcast, sponsored by Cards Accepted. I'm Elliot Jackson and I'm joined as always by George Smith. Hello George, how are you?
I'm not bad, mate. Not bad. Really, really looking forward to reflecting on what feels like has been a significant week at both ends of the table this week, both last weekend and the midweek action as well. So I've been looking forward to getting stuck into this all day. I'm going to be honest. I'm looking forward to this.
Yeah, it's the good bit, isn't it? You know,
it is.
The start Easter's of the season is always great. I feel like a bit of a slog at times, as much as we love the Championship. But once you get into the last dozen, the last 10 games, which we are now in, heading into the weekend, this is the good stuff. This is what you wait for. This is the pinnacle of the Championship season. And boy, oh boy, have we got so much to play for. Top of the table. Who's going to finish first and second? Who's going to finish in fifth and sixth? And who on earth, out of about seven teams, is going to get relegated? It is set up for a grandstand finish. And we cannot wait to cover every single second here on the Championship Chat Podcast. We will start, George, at the top of the table with Ipswich Town. Now, 6 wins in a row for the Tractor Boys, and their promotion push is well on track. There was a little wobble around Christmas time. I think they went through a run of 1-8 at one stage. But they are now firmly in the driving seat for second place, 3 points behind Leicester City and 2 points ahead of Leeds United in third. Ipswich having us dropped as low as fourth, and I think a lot of people have doubted Ipswich's staying power across the course of the season, but they keep finding new ways to reinvigorate them. Ipswich Town fashion, they've had a dramatic week, beating Plymouth Argyle relatively comfortably at the weekend with 2 second-half goals, and then to go and winning the most dramatic of circumstances against Bristol City. Very akin to the Rotherham United win in February, where they won the last kick of the game 4-3. This one was 3-2, but they went 1-0 down. They got themselves back to 1-1. Then they went 2-1 down, got themselves back to 2-2. Missed a penalty and still went on to win the game with a couple of minutes to spare. Unbelievable drama at Portman Road. The amount of goals that the supporters at Ipswich have seen this season at home, for both teams, home and away, is pretty astonishing, to be honest. And there does feel like a growing momentum about Ipswich. We've always expected them, well, maybe not us, but the general media, the neutrals have always expected them to just fall short, to not have the staying power. But when you look actually at the business they did in January, It reflects pretty well. They had a bit of a wobble around that period because they obviously lost George Hurst. They didn't get Kiefer Moore in until deadline day. But Sarmiento has had an impact since he's come in. Kiefer Moore's had a brilliant impact. And he's not. I think it's pretty easy when you sign Kiefer Moore to change your style too much and go a bit too direct and play off him too much, because we know how good he is in the air. Ipswich haven't changed how they play, but he's been the perfect focal point. And that's exactly what George Hurst offered them. I think Hurst is obviously a little bit more mobile, but Moore is more of a threat in the air. And it's worked perfectly. And when you've got the quality of Chaplin, Wes Burns, Leif Davis, who had a very interesting game with 2 assists and certainly a part in the second goal where he misjudges the ball over his head, lets it run, winger crosses it in. The marking in the middle is shoddy, so I'm not putting that at Leif Davis's door, but probably could have done a little bit better for the second goal Tommy Conway headed in. But when you've got the quality of those players delivering balls into the box, Kiefer Moore is only going to be a huge asset for your team. And it feels like the momentum with Ipswich and just the manner in which they are winning games, the way they are coming back from behind, the way they are scoring so late, you do wonder if it's written in the stars a little bit. And the way they are galvanizing, that, you know, I've heard a lot about people talking about the Premier League title race and how Liverpool keep scoring late goals, and ex-players have been talking about what that does for a dressing room, how it's even better if you score late, 4-0 or coming from behind. Those are the best victories. And those are the ones that Ipswich are turning out. They're also having the more comfortable ones, which they've had in this run of 6. But, you know, the late win against Rotherham, the late win at home to Bristol City, that really sparks belief, not just within the players and the staff, but with the supporters too, that Ipswich Town can be a Premier League club next season.
Most definitely. And I think it goes back to a point I think I raised last week where I said about, obviously after Leeds beat Leicester nearly a fortnight ago on that Friday evening, everybody was then talking about straight away, we've got a title race now, a two-horse race nearly between Leeds United and Leicester City. And I said at the time, do not rule Ipswich out of this equation yet. And here we are, a fortnight on, Ipswich are now back ahead of Leeds, albeit by a couple of points, because they've found form at just the right time. Six wins in a row, it's a remarkable effort. And of course, these results have featured sort of a varied blend of results, in the sense that they've coasted to comfortable wins away at Millwall, routine win at Plymouth, as you said a few minutes ago. And then, of course, those dramatic comebacks against the likes of Rotherham and Bristol City. And all of a sudden, now you're looking at a team that's amassed 28 points from losing positions. That says a lot in itself about the character, the mentality and the belief of this group. It's the most any Championship side's won from a losing position since Aston Villa in 2018-19. And they won, I think, 29 points. So it was only one away from equaling that. So that says a lot about this group. But I think you've made a very valid point there about Kiefer Moore. He came in January. Obviously, there was a fair bit of interest from a lot of Championship clubs, as was to be expected, that the profile of player that he is, his record at this level in recent years. But as I said at the time, it felt like a very sort of Ipswich-style signing where he's fitted in like a glove. He's just slotted into that vacant position that George Hurst had left because of his injury. And like you said, the players he's got around him, the technical players, it gives them that support, that focal point to sort of bounce off, bring into play and aim for as well for the goals of his own. So that was a very, very smart move by Ipswich to bring him in. But I think overall, when you zoom out and look at Ipswich, it's an incredible adventure that they've been on in the last 2 years under Kieran McKenna. It is just beyond belief what they've done this season. I think a lot of people at the start of their campaign were sort of expecting Ipswich have the potential to certainly perhaps knock on the door of the playoffs. We were a little bit more reserved in our approach. I think I had them in ninth place, I think it was. I think you was a little bit lower.
12th I had.
I just can't believe what they've done. And like you said, people have been sort of expecting for a while they're going to drop off. It's going to inevitably come. It may still do, but I don't think it will. I really don't. They've got so much momentum behind them now, so much confidence. And ultimately, their home form at Portman Road has just been absolutely incredible. You made a good point, though, about the goals that Ipswich fans have been treated to at Portman Road. I've actually worked this out as a statistic only this morning, actually. 76 league goals have been scored at Portman Road this season between Ipswich and their opponents.
That must be the most. That must be.
It is. It's the most in the division by only six, though. There's been 70, I think, plundered at Home Park this season, Plymouth. So they've not got that sort of a massive margin of leeway, but they're certainly the most productive ground in the Championship for goals this season. But
I'll tell you what, just to jump in just on the point that you were making about people not expecting Ipswich to be where they are. I also think that is a big asset if they don't go up automatically, because a lot of the time you see teams go really close to automatic promotion, not get there, and it's like sticking a pin in a balloon. Brighton in 2015-16, the perfect example, when they didn't go up on the final day at Middlesbrough, then they lost to Sheffield Wednesday, who finished sixth and 20-25 points odd behind them. And they couldn't recover. They did have bad injuries as well, it's worth noting. But with Ipswich, I feel like even if they don't get automatically promoted, I don't think it will be as much of a hammer blow as, say, maybe Southampton. Now, if they don't get automatic promotion, there will still be a lot of expectation on them to win the playoffs. And I'm not trying to be negative when I talk about Ipswich in this way, because they are ultimately in second place. They're 2 points clear. But even if they don't and they go into the playoffs in third or fourth, I still think they've got a really, really good chance. And I think still the positive energy will be there. I wonder if Southampton get really close on the last day or something, miss out, I think it would be different for them. Same with Leeds. And I think that will probably play in Ipswich's favour as well.
Yeah, I can certainly see where you're coming from there. And I think the thing for Ipswich, though, of course, it would sort of be a different scenario come the playoffs if they did encounter a little bit of a poor run in the next sort of 5 or 6 weeks, say they lose 2 or 3 and momentum just dips a little bit. But we're talking about a team here that has lost 4 league games all season as a newly promoted club. it's absolutely staggering. And you think back to last season, what Sunderland did, obviously they were fresh out of League One. They achieved a top six finish, albeit sneaking in on the final day. Ipswich now are in a position where they've been in a commanding position all season. I've just been looking back at their league results over this season and last season as well. They've lost five league matches since the beginning of 2023. It's absolutely phenomenal. There's no other word to describe what Kieran McKenna has done. It is an incredible job. And realistically, when you do sort of break the squad down sort of all the way through, there's not been a massive sort of influx of new signings this season. There's been a few, but it's not a case where they've completely decimated the squad from last year and brought in better standard players. Leif Davis was there last year. Connor Chaplin was. Wes Burns was. Massimo Luongo was. The list goes on. They've added flashes of quality in the likes of Sarmiento, Kiefer Moore, Amari Hutchinson. They've brought in players that strengthen them in key areas. But overall, Kieran McKenna, for the most part, has done the job with the same squad he had in League One. And I, from a neutral perspective, I'd really like Ipswich to do it. I really would. It would be a fairy tale story, one that I think they'd richly deserve because they've played some of the best football, I feel, this season in the Championship. I think they've been a better side to watch than probably Southampton have, to be fair. Leeds have certainly played some good stuff at times, but I think consistently Ipswich have been all season long. Yes, they concede a lot of goals, but how many times have we said they outscore everybody they seem to play? So you question whether it's sustainable. They've proven that it is sustainable to play this open, expansive way. And it is entertaining to watch. There's no denying it. So a really big week for them, obviously, with Leeds dropping points at Huddersfield last weekend. They pounced on that, winning later in the day at Plymouth, then beat Bristol City on Tuesday night, as we've discussed. And now suddenly they've got six in a row. You look at Ipswich's next two games ahead of the international break coming up very soon. Cardiff away this coming weekend. Sheffield Wednesday at home the weekend. If Ipswich and up are at it, they can get 6 points from those two games. There's no denying that. Easter weekend, Blackburn away. They'll be sniffing blood for that one. And then Southampton at home on Easter Monday. That could be an absolute belter, that one. That could be incredible. But as we've seen, momentum's a wonderful thing. And Ipswich have had it now for the best part of 15, 16 months.
And they're certainly going to need to keep it because there are four teams vying for two automatic places. Two because Leicester City, since we last spoke, George, have lost a third successive game. They then responded with a 1-0 win at Sunderland in the week. So probably the biggest wobble of the season from Enzo Maresca's side, losing three in a row with that 2-1 defeat to Queen's Park Rangers. And Maresca got quite a bit of stick for some of his team selection against QPR, bearing in mind they'd lost the previous two, albeit one of them being the Leeds game, which we spoke about on last week's pod, where they didn't play badly. In most occasions, they would win that game probably 2-0 or quite comfortably against other opposition. But he went for Ben Nelson, who's a young centre-back, a right centre-back, moved fast into the middle of the back three, as it is when they're in possession, and left Connor Cody out. And considering Yannick Vestergaard is suspended for two games, or it might even be three games, actually, from now. I'm not sure if he's got 10 or 15 yellows. But he was suspended, so he was out from the middle of that back three. And he went with Ben Nelson and shifted the back three around. And I think they just lack some experience. No Connor Cody. Patson Daka leading the line. They just looked a little bit disjointed against QPR. Then I think he'd learned from that lesson because all of a sudden Connor Cody comes back. Callum Doyle comes back, who we've not seen for a very long time. Obviously had that bad knee injury in September, and he's not been able to get back in because of James Justin. But Justin had quite a tough game against QPR. Jamie Vardy recalled to the starting 11, scores the winning goal, and I think adding that experience after such a mini wobble, it was really important, and that was a big part of them getting over the line and getting the 3 points. And Cody, like, Vestergaard's been really good, and Cody missed the start of the season through injury. So I totally understand why Vestergaard's played all season, but I was really surprised. I do think he's been underused a little bit by Maresca at times. And certainly at the weekend, I looked at it and saw Ben Nelson had come in at right centre-back, and he'd have to reshuffle the entire, like, Fass has gone into the middle, and it seemed like a peculiar move at the time. I know Nelson obviously actually scored in that game, but I think that experience that Cody brings in the centre of the back three, or whether it's Vestergaard, they need that person because Fass is not someone you want in the middle of a back three. He's not that composed, calm figure. He's a bit erratic. He suits the wider centre-back role. So, yeah, I thought that was a mistake and then rectified for the game at Sunderland.
Yeah, I would certainly agree with that. Connor Cody, as we know, he's a player that's been there, done it and got the T-shirt. Obviously, he won the championship title with Wolves back in 2017-18. Vastly experienced player at Premier League level. He's been away to major tournaments with England purely for the purpose of just having that experience heading the dressing room, even if he's not played. But for Leicester in the bigger picture, that win at Sunderland on Tuesday night was absolutely crucial. It was so, so important. After losing to QPR, marking a third straight league defeat, at that point, you just started to think, are they going to encounter one of those dreaded wobbles that when you're seemingly steamrolling towards the title and there's nothing in the world that can stop you, and you suddenly hit the buffers and you have a bit of a wobble, you do start to panic. And I looked at the stats before that game against Sunderland the other night, and it was quite revealing that had Leicester have lost that game, it would be the first time outside the Premier League they'd lost four league games in over 14 years. So it was a big challenge coming up for them. But they went to Sunderland, who, you've got to admit, have not been in great form themselves in recent weeks. They've been struggling, but they went there and they got a narrow victory. They just found a way to get the job done. And I think at this stage now, for Enzo Maresca, having encountered this wobble, it was just one of those games where, by hook or by crook, you have to get the points. And that's exactly what they did. So it's just allowed them a little bit of a chance to relieve some of the pressure, with obviously Ipswich and Leeds both winning in midweek as well, both on Tuesday night. And obviously it just gives them that little bit of breathing space heading into the weekend. But I honestly do believe that this race isn't yet run. Ipswich are only 3 points behind them. That is not an impossible gap to bridge, not by any stretch. Leeds are only 5 behind them. So we've certainly got a title race, in my opinion, that is a three-way battle. And I go back to that point where I said earlier on, everybody after that Leeds-Leicester game a fortnight ago was talking of Leeds going to challenge Leicester for the title. It's only them now that can get close to them. And I said straight away, do not discount Ipswich in this run at all. They're in a brilliant vein of form right now. They're playing some good stuff. Leeds obviously had a bit of a blip away at Huddersfield last weekend, but they've won 10 in 11. They responded with a 1-0 win of their own in midweek against Stoke City. So all three teams are in a position where they'll be believing that they can get one of these two spots. There's no doubt about that. And it seems crazy that it's Leicester that have been in the worst vein of form of the three of them in recent weeks, having not lost 3 of 4, but they got that win that they needed. So this is going to be a pretty gripping battle. I don't think this is done yet. I really don't. And of course, it's a bit of a pity with the way it's shaping up that Leeds-Leicester and Leicester Ipswich have all played each other twice now, which is a bit of a shame. There's no more battles between them.
Leeds Southampton everybody on the last day of the season, no?
Yeah, it is indeed. But obviously Southampton have lost a little bit of ground, and obviously they did miss out on the chance to gain some in midweek with their game against Preston being postponed on Wednesday night.
Those hefty industrial estates setting fire.
Yes, it was a bit unfortunate. It ruined your attempt to get in a shock there, didn't it, on our Shocks and Bankers? You had Preston to win. We'll never know the outcome of that one now. But
we'll just assume I was right, I think.
Well, to be fair, Preston have been in good form of late, and I think we're going to discuss them in a little while. But I think, obviously, like you said there, Leeds-Southampton, final day, it could still be a defining match. It's every chance it could be. Wouldn't rule anything out this season the way it's going. And Southampton too have still got to go to Ipswich. So there's some big, big games still to be decided in this. But whereas a few weeks ago you would have sort of said, Leicester have won the title, that's done. It's a straight shootout for second. Now I'm not so convinced that it is a straight shootout for second. I think there's a shootout to be contested over first place. So Ipswich at the minute, they've got the bit between their teeth. They're flying. Leeds as well. Leicester, they'll be hoping that they've surpassed their wobble now and got over it, got back to winning ways. So it's going to be a gripping watch. But I just think Leicester, now they've got back to winning ways after that blip, they'll be thinking, hopefully the worst of it's over now. We can just get on with the task in hand and finish the job.
Yeah, it certainly won't be a procession. Leeds United, George, if you look at the form table for the last 10 games, Leeds United have taken the most points in the Championship. If you look at the form guide for the last 20 games, Leeds United have taken the most points in the Championship. If you look at the form guide for the last 30 games, Leeds United have taken the most points in the Championship. They're still third. And that again, just owes to how brilliant the form of Ipswich and Leicester have been over the course of the season, and the fact that they had such a terrible, well, it wasn't terrible by most standards. It wasn't obviously as good as they have been, and it wasn't great, a great start. But, you know, if Leeds United had put the form together that they have in the last 30 games any other season, they'd still be clear at the top of the championships. So to still be chasing their tail and 2 points behind, despite the numbers I've just reeled off there, shows the level you have to be at the top of this championship. They beat Stoke City 1-0 thanks to a deflected strike from Dan James. They did have other chances to wrap the game up and make it a little bit more safe. Matteo Joseph having a shot saved by the face of Daniel Iverson. Joseph had another chance, but it was Dan James that hit Iverson in the face. Bit of a loving for Gruev as well in midfield, who has come in and done fantastically well. Leeds had a bit of a defensive crisis probably a month ago now, which saw Ethan Ampadu slip from central midfield, where we've seen him play all season and been fantastic, to centre-back, which is a role he's played many times previous to Leeds, at Sheffield United on loan, at Wolves, at Chelsea, in there when he's played in the cup games and various other loans. So not an unfamiliar position, but that's given an opportunity for Gruev to come in and partner Kamara. And he's been absolutely fantastic in the middle of the pitch. He's provided energy, physicality. And you think Leeds are basically playing with four central midfielders in the team, with Archie Gray at right back, who was rested for this game. Ampadu at centre back, and then obviously Kamara and Gruev in the middle of the pitch. So I wanted to give a shout out to him because I think he's been really important, and a lot of Leeds fans have been citing him as someone that's really impressed in the last month or so. But yeah, to have taken the most points in the last 30 games and still not be top of the championship or even in the top two is pretty remarkable.
It is, and it just sort of summarises the standard that's been set at the top of the league this season, doesn't it? Obviously, Ipswich, we've talked about, waxed lyrical about them. They've set a ferocious pace, likewise Leicester over the course of the season. But Leeds, it almost feels like we're sort of, well, I certainly feel like, from my point of view, I'm sort of downgrading Leeds in the sense that they're not in that second spot and they've won 10 out of the last 11. It's only as a result of that little draw at Huddersfield last weekend that you're sort of thinking, maybe Ipswich have now got the edge. But they've won 10 and 11. It's ridiculous, isn't it, that they're not second after a run like that, and being so defensively tight as well during that run for the most part. But like I've said, this race, I think, is going to ebb and flow. And it is ultimately going to be down to who blinks first, I think. Who is going to encounter this wobble? Obviously, Leicester have had theirs, it seems. Maybe they're over it now. Ipswich not really had one. They're the only team in the league that have not lost back-to-back games all season. Are they going to go the
They went for a run of one win in eight over Christmas, didn't they, with quite a few draws?
They did, but they were still picking up points, weren't they? They were still getting a point here and there. But Leeds, obviously, whereas Leeds had that bit of a really damaging period between Christmas and New Year, didn't they? I mean, they lost to Preston on Boxing Day, and then they lost the final game of the year away at West Brom in the space of about 3 days. They lost two games in a row. But on the other side of that, they've since won 10 out of 11, including 9 on the trot. So it swings and roundabouts, whichever way you wish to look at it. But the point and the fact of the matter is, the bottom line ultimately is we've got three teams. And to be fair, you can't discount Southampton yet. They're not out of this. And it almost feels like we're forgetting about them a little bit, perhaps because they didn't play in midweek. But of course, they got a crucial victory at Birmingham last weekend in the last minute with Joe Rebo winning that 4-3. Bonkers game at St Andrews. So you can't rule Southampton out yet. They're only 6 points further behind Leeds and eight behind Ipswich. It's not an impossible gap to bridge. And they've obviously got a game in hand after that game was postponed on Wednesday night against Preston. So Southampton can't be disregarded just yet. But 3 points between Ipswich and Leicester at the moment. Leeds United two further back from Ipswich. It's going to be tasty, this. I think it could go down to the wire. There'll be points in the season where you look at the fixture list in the 10 remaining games and think that's sort of a key weekend. That's where something could be won or lost. The Easter weekend, I always think, is pivotal. A bit earlier this year because of the way Easter's fallen than last. But that's always one of those weekends where you play Friday, Monday, that you think this could be a really, really big weekend, playing twice in the space of 72 hours. So let's see what happens. Yeah, I think it could go down to the wire, but I think one thing we can certainly agree on is that Leicester seemingly coasting towards the title is not the case anymore.
Absolutely. The battle at the bottom of the championship, George, is absolutely bloody mental. 6 points separate, 7 points separate 13th and 23rd. Sheffield Wednesday are now level on points with those directly above them on 38 points. They've won four games in a row in the Championship for the first time in 7 years and are still in the bottom three despite winning five of the last six games. They are in fantastic form. They beat Plymouth Argyle, which was a really big six-pointer. Plymouth Argyle fans very unhappy at the moment with Ian Foster and how their season is feels like it's unravelling a little bit. The goals have certainly dried up. It's one win in seven. They go to Ewood Park on Saturday, which I think whoever doesn't win that match, and if it's a draw, probably both sets of fans, is going to be an absolute meltdown next week. Which I'm, for the sake of my livelihood, I'm hoping is Plymouth Argyle fans, with no disrespect to Plymouth in any way, shape or form, but for the sake of my sanity, I hope it's not Blackburn Rovers. But whoever doesn't win that game is basically going to have a massive meltdown, and it could be both sets of fans, to be quite honest. But let's talk about Wednesday. Danny Rearle, what a job he has done. They would be 11th in the Championship table since he came in. He's done a phenomenal job, and I think they will stay up. I think Sheffield Wednesday will stay up. They are on 38 points now, the same as the teams directly above them. They're only behind on goal difference. Do I think Wednesday will pick up more points than Stoke, Blackburn, Huddersfield in the last 10 games? Yeah, I do, actually. And I think they'll stay in the Championship.
Yeah, I'm thinking I'm inclined to agree with you on this one, to be honest. Wednesday, the transformation under Danny Rearle has been astounding. I think that's the only way you can describe. Wednesday were dead and buried after 10 games. Even a few games after Danny Rearle had arrived, they were dead and buried. Though performances improved under him, the results initially didn't obviously reflect those performances. There was obviously a sense of a lack of confidence. The quality wasn't quite there. But it was clear that Danny Rearle, over a course of time, was going to sort of get this team in a position where they could fight and compete on a more even keel. And we've seen that in the last few months. Wednesday, obviously, four wins in a row, five wins in six. It's remarkable form. And like you said, it's crazy. They've not actually gone anywhere. They're still 23rd in the table, but they're now back on equal points with Stoke, Huddersfield. They're within only two of Plymouth now, who's 16th, which is absolutely crazy. I mean, for example, we're recording this on Thursday evening. Wednesday go first this weekend, playing Friday night against Leeds at Hillsborough. If Wednesday win that game, they're going to jump from 23rd to 16th with one win, which just proves how bonkers this league is. It's absolutely crazy. It's astounding. But I think the biggest takeaway for me for Wednesday is the fact that when they lost to Huddersfield 4-0 on the 3rd of February, at that point, I think as a Wednesday fan myself, I had the towel in. I'd accept it was game over. They were 8 points adrift as recently as the 3rd of February. And now they're back on equal points. And you make a point about there. You think Wednesday will get more points than the likes, say, of Stoke between now and the end of the season. The difference is for Wednesday is that they've got the confidence now. They've been the ones that have been doing the hunting, been doing the chasing. They're the ones with all the momentum, the confidence, the belief, and are happy to be in this position, if you like.
There's a lot less anxiety around Sheffield Wednesday, isn't there, compared to the likes of Stoke and Blackburn in particular, who are really, really just in free fall a little bit. Stoke obviously got the win last weekend, which has done them a big job. 2-0 against Middlesbrough. Losing at Leeds is no big problem in the grand schemes of whether they stay up or not. But it feels like Plymouth now you can throw into this mix as well with their fixtures and the way the supporters are feeling about things at the moment. It feels like Wednesday have got really positive momentum, whereas the other clubs don't.
You're absolutely right. There's no doubt about it. Wednesday have obviously done the hunting for so long. I mean, they've been in the bottom three since literally the second weekend of the season. They've not been out of the bottom three since then. And after 10 games, everybody had written them off. Even at Christmas, I think a lot of people had still written them off. They were sort of saying there's absolutely no chance they're going to get out of this. And like you said there, the likes of Blackburn Rovers, Stoke City, they've been on a gradual slide into this position. They didn't really expect to be here, whereas Wednesday didn't expect to be with a chance of even staying up. Never mind now, sort of, even though they're at the bottom of the pile still in the sense of those trying to escape this, they're probably one of the favourites because of the momentum that they've got. I was at Hillsborough on Tuesday night against Plymouth. the first half in particular, Wednesday were a class above, absolutely a class above Plymouth. They played so well. Jan Pervaeder was causing so many problems, and he's been a really smart signing in January. EK Ugbo the same. His goals have obviously been so key. But I just think, like you said there, the feel-good factor that is around Wednesday at the minute, it's not been like this all season. Obviously, Danny Rearl has done a marvellous job. And personally, I think when it comes to settling on the Manager of the Season award, and we'll do our own episode where we debate the awards and give them out and Team of the Season, that all sort of thing. I think it's going to be hard if Wednesday do stay up to overlook Danny Rearl. I really do.
I think it will be between Danny Rearl, Kieran McKenna and Marty Cifuentes, assuming Wednesday stay up. And I don't think it matters as much if Ipswich stay. If Danny Rearl keeps Wednesday up and Ipswich don't get promoted, Danny Rearl will get Manager of the Season for me.
Yeah, I think you're certainly within rights to give it to him. I mean, when you look at Wednesday, a lot of fans of other clubs sort of say, why are the Wednesday fans getting so excited? You've not gone anywhere. But from the basis where Wednesday were at, this is a manager that has never managed a club before in his life. He's not been supplied with one permanent signing, not a single one. All of the four signings he's made have been loans. Yes, Ike Ugbo, Jan Pervaeder have had significant impacts, but he's not been given a pound to spend in terms of an actual transfer fee in itself. So I think it's quite remarkable the job that Danny Rearl has done. He's rebuilt the mood around the club. Wednesday as well, let's be fair, they play a good brand of football now. It's high intensity, pace, trickery, good technically to watch. And like I say, I went to the Plymouth game the other night and Wednesday were the better side. Plymouth, to be fair, they responded well after going behind. They did give Wednesday a bit of a scare towards the end, but Wednesday always looked the more superior of those two sides. So I think Wednesday have certainly got a very, very good chance of getting out of this now. They've fought the way back. They're back on an even keel with those that they're competing with. They've got two very, very hard games coming up, Leeds and Ipswich. It's very interesting how you can weigh these two. You can sort of say they've won five and six in a run they really needed to get points from. Is it two free hits? But I suppose at the same time, it's another two games where you sort of think it's a couple of free hits, we'll take what we get. But at the same time, if those around them take 6 points from their next two and Wednesday lose both, they're back where they started again. They've got all the chasing to do after the international break. So I think if Wednesday can at least get maybe one win from these two games, or maybe even a couple of draws or whatever, or one draw, then they're certainly going to take confidence from it. But Leeds, Ipswich, very, very difficult tasks. But as Wednesday have proven, they are certainly at home. They're no mugs anymore. They've certainly improved considerably, and Danny Rearl deserves an enormous amount of credit. And probably worth mentioning as well, for anybody who wasn't aware, even a certain Hansi Flick obviously turned up at Hillsborough to watch on Tuesday night to watch the Isles. It's not a bad company to be trying to entertain, is it? Hansi Flick obviously worked with Danny Rearl at Bayern Munich and with the German national squad as well. So he's certainly got that opportunity to show his mentor what he's capable of. And obviously he did that the other night. But like you said, I think if Wednesday do stay up, he's a genuine candidate for Manager of the Season. The job he's done is absolutely incredible, to be quite honest.
QPR still out the bottom three because they drew 2-2 with West Brom in what was a fantastic game of football in midweek. Mikey Johnson with an absolute screamer. What a pickup he's been from Celtic on loan.
Magnificent. He has. He's been absolutely unbelievable.
Tom Fellows on the other wing as well has been phenomenal. But the injection those two wingers have given West Brom have really added another dimension to their attack. But there was plenty of controversy. QPR came roaring back in the second half after going ahead and then find themselves 2-1 behind. There was a missed penalty, a Steve Cook overhead kick, and a very, very impressive save from a certain Cedric Kiprey, which went unnoticed by the match officials. I'm really sad that Darnell Furlong saved Steve Cook's clearance off the line, because that would have been a real contender for goal of the season and probably one of the most unlikely goals. Like, if you didn't watch the game and you just like check your phone and saw, oh, Steve Cook scored, you're probably thinking a header from a corner. And the reality is he's done an overhead kick from about 15, 18 yards out into the top corner over the goalkeeper. So sadly, that was ruined by Darnell Furlong, but a fantastic game for QPR. I think they will get out of it as well. And then you've got Blackburn and Millwall that drew 1-1 at Ewood Park in what was a very dour game. Millwall just sat in, didn't really try and attack. Blackburn had all of the ball, but didn't have the quality or the creativity to break down Millwall. They then went behind to Millwall's first shot on target of the match, which was from a Burnley loanee, Michael Obafemi, his goal, first goal for the club. But Sam Smodic scored his 20th Championship goal to level it. And Birmingham City got a point at Hull, a 1-1 draw with Djukovic coming off the bench to equalise a game that Hull had plenty but didn't get that second goal, and the Duke coming off the bench to head in across from the far side. So of those three draws, George, I think certainly QPR's reflects the best, and that they will be most pleased with that set of results. Blackburn, of course, really, really struggling at the minute. Millwall will be happy with the point, I think, at Ewood Park, and Birmingham happy to come from behind to draw. And then on Wednesday night, George, as well as the QPR West Brom draw, you also had Huddersfield losing at Cardiff. Cardiff, in fairness, their recent form's picked up after a real wobble under Errol Buller. It looked like it could really derail them. But ever since sort of drawing 0-0 with Blackburn, they seem to have turned a corner. A couple of wins at home, beating Bristol City as well at the weekend in the seven-side derby was a big result for them. So they're turning a bit of a corner now, and kind of looks like their season might be over, but in a positive way, because I think fans were worried about getting dragged in. But yeah, you've got Blackburn, you've got a Millwall drawing, Birmingham getting a draw, QPR drawing, Huddersfield losing. So probably QPR will definitely be the happiest with those set of results.
Yeah, definitely. I think obviously the biggest winners of the midweek were Sheffield Wednesday and QPR, weren't they? They certainly got the biggest results. And I watched the QPR West Brom game on Wednesday night and thought QPR were desperately unlucky not to win, to be fair. Certainly in the second half, they peppered that West Bromwich Albion goal. Obviously, Cedric Kipre with a minor bit of cheating, shall we say, to hook that effort away. And I was
I saw an interview on Twitter with Steve Cook, who was absolutely lambasting the officials for missing it. And that's fair enough. But there is also a Steve Cook incident from when he was in the Premier League with Bournemouth, where he did very similar. I think he got sent off for it, but a very similar incident where he saved it on the line.
But no, I mean, I watched that game Wednesday night, and when that header went towards the goal, I was watching it, sat on the sofa, and I just leapt up and went, what a save, thinking Alex Palmer had tipped it over the bar, because on first viewing, it looked like he had tipped it over.
You weren't wrong.
But then it was the replay came, and I was like, you cheat. That is really naughty. But let's be honest, QPR, yeah, they'll feel aggrieved that didn't go their way. Obviously, they missed a penalty as well through Michael Frey, which I was absolutely convinced when he stepped up to say that penalty he was going to miss. He just looked as though he was so
cocky
that he was going to score. It was awful. It was absolutely awful.
Alex Palmer will be pretty pleased about making that save as well, because he certainly should have done a lot better for the first goal.
Yes, he should have done, no doubt about it. And the second one as well, obviously, was very, very scrappy that Sam Field headed in.
I'm not blaming
him. Seemed to go into the net. No, it's not the goalkeeper's fault, but West Brom as a collective won't be happy with the manner in which they conceded that goal. But it was a good game, I must say. So, obviously, QPR, obviously, another point on the board. If you would have offered them 4 points from Leicester and West Brom, any QPR fan would have snatched your hand off for that. So, just keeps their little run of momentum going, like Sheffield Wednesday. They've obviously done the chasing. They're now in a position where they're looking to not only drag those in, but overtake them and potentially pull away them with the momentum that they've got. As for the others, Huddersfield, 4 points from the first two games under the new boss, Andre Brighton-Writer, and then obviously beaten at Cardiff. It's probably one of those games where you look at where, in realistic terms, it probably could have gone either way, that game against Cardiff. It's one of the matches where you sort of look at and think, not really a clear favourite for this.
They would have probably expected to have lost to Leeds and would have been relatively happy with a point at Cardiff, I think.
Probably so. So, yeah, it swings and roundabouts, isn't it? Whichever way you wish to view it, wherever the points come from. So, no doubt it's going to lead to the inevitable viewpoint of which two are going to go down with Rotherham, because I think it's fair to say we've written Rotherham off now. They're gone. They need to earn the same amount of points as they've earned already this season just to catch Sheffield Wednesday, which is
Rotherham are very quickly becoming one of the worst teams we've seen at Championship level. The way it's unravelled for them, having been so competitive, the stats back it up. I think they've got the second fewest amount of points of any Championship team since the rebrand at this stage of the season. They've only won three games all season, which is the fewest amount of wins. Their goal difference is absolutely horrific. And to be 4-0 down at half-time against Coventry, Liam Richardson said it was the worst 45 minutes of his managerial career. And Tony Stewart's come out in an interview this week and said Liam Richardson's definitely the man for them in League One next season. And I don't disagree that that should be the case. And I think he'll have a good job, in a good crack at it in League One. But this is turning into quite a traumatic relegation with the way they're performing. They're going to have to get some results because otherwise there could be a big hangover for next season. So I completely agree with you on that. In terms of the two teams that are going to go down, I'll tell you who concerned me the most. Stoke, Plymouth, Blackburn and Huddersfield are the ones that concern me the most for those two spots. Blackburn, obviously, is the team that I cover for my job. They have won two of their last 18 championship games, which is nearly half a season. It's nearly half a Premier League season. And they have the toughest run-in of anyone in the bottom half based on points per game of their opponents. That's also weighted in terms of home and away. So some of the games they've still got to play. They've still got to play Southampton at home, Leeds away, Leicester away on the last day of the season, Ipswich at home on Good Friday. They've got Coventry at Ewood Park. They've got Sheffield Wednesday at Ewood Park. They've got to go to Sunderland, Bristol City, and they've got Plymouth at home, obviously, on Saturday. If they don't win on Saturday, I am really, really worried. And John Eustace has gone under a lot of criticism for some of the way the run and tried to be uber positive in the media, which is obviously talking to me and radio. But I think the fans are really worried and there's a lot of anxiety. The draw against Millwall was really poor in the week. It was not a good performance. And there have been positives from Eustace coming in. They're a lot better defensively. But in terms of winning football matches, they've not won any of the six since he's come in. They've won two in 18. They've completely fallen out of the habit of it. And I think a lot, if you don't pick up any wins out of a run of Swansea away, Millwall at home and Plymouth at home, where are the points going to come from? Because as I say, those are really tough games that I've just listed off. You're thinking Middlesbrough away might be a place to get some points because they're not in great form, albeit one in midweek. Bristol City are hot and cold. Sunderland are a little bit hot and cold and their season's pretty much over now. And Sheffield Wednesday at home is going to be a massive game, which is their third to last game of the season. Outside those four, the other six are really, really, like, you can pretty much write off. Well, you can't, but a lot of people would want to write off the four games against the top four. Coventry are probably going to still be in the mix for the playoffs when they come to Ewood. And then you've got Plymouth, as I say, at the weekend. So Blackburn are going to have to get some points. They're going to have to get 10, 11, 12 points. And they're going to have to do it the hard way because the run they've got is terrible. So there's a lot of anxiety around them at the moment. Stoke obviously beat Middlesbrough, which was a good result. I'm still not convinced. You know, they beat QPR not that long ago and then carried on being pretty poor. So I'm not convinced they've definitely turned a corner. Plymouth seem to be the one that are sinking like a stone and they've got pretty tough fixtures as well. Not quite as tough as Blackburn, but they're, I think, third in the points per game rankings that I just spoke about. And then you've got Huddersfield as well, who I just wonder whether they will run out of games with the new manager to get enough points on the board. Their performances since Darren Moore left would probably have me to suggest that they are better than that some of the teams around them. But I just wonder whether Blackburn might get above them. So for me, I'm looking at Stoke, Plymouth, Blackburn and Huddersfield as the main four that I'm worried about. Birmingham are not out of the woods by any means, but my gut feeling is they will get out of it. They could do with Tony Mowbray back sooner or later, albeit, of course, his health is the number one priority. But from a purely footballing perspective, they could do with their their leader back with them. And QPR and Wednesday can't get complacent. You know, Wednesday is still second bottom. They're going to have to still win more games. QPR the same. They're only out of it on goal difference. So there's a lot of teams. But those would be the four for me, George, that I would be particularly concerned about.
I'm glad you've selected a four because I haven't got a bloody clue, to be quite honest. This league is just absolutely insane. I have no idea who is going to go down. I really, really don't, because this league has the element to surprise so, so often.
Who are you most concerned about? It's got to be some teams to look at, I think. They're sinking.
On current form, you've got to say Blackburn, haven't you? You have to, on current form. But there's also that element in the back of your mind that you think a couple of wins and it could change everything. You just do not know. This league has just got
the one mitigation for Blackburn is the fact they played 8 games in 24 days since John Eustace has come in. He's not had a free week on the training ground yet. So next week, they're free. They've got Middlesbrough away, but they've got a free week. And then they've got the international world break. But the fixtures then get so much harder. That's the problem.
That's the thing, isn't it? He has had a lot to contend with in terms of volume of games. And like we said last week, I watched the Blackburn game in the FA Cup against Newcastle and I thought they were excellent. And I really felt it was sort of a springboard to build from and kick on ahead of the weekend where obviously they were beaten by Swansea, then drew with Millwall. But as we know, all too often, performances in cup games can obviously be one-offs. They can be very, very different.
It's by far and away the best they played that Newcastle. They've not got anywhere near
that performance. They were superb that night. They were absolutely superb. But obviously, Blackburn's form, 2 wins in 18, is quite rightly enough to raise concerns. In terms of other clubs, I think you've got to be concerned about. You can't rule Stoke out. I'm quite worried about Birmingham, to be honest. They've not progressed in the way that I thought. Even prior to Tony Mowbray becoming ill, they didn't sort of have that significant impact that I expected he would. Whether that's because of the health issues he was encountering, it's quite possible, and we can't speculate on that. From a football perspective, though, Birmingham, I am worried. Plymouth, their situation is interesting. They were a team that were seemingly coasting towards a comfortable, positive mid-table finish in their first season back in the Championship. That obviously all changed when Stephen Schumacher came in. Ian Foster came in, had a relatively solid start, I think is probably the right way about it. Do you remember anything sparkling.
When we did our mid-season predictions in January, I said this could happen with Plymouth. I did say, as much as I thought they'd stay up, I did say the uncertainty and so much change could undo them. And that's 1 win in 7 now. I think they've got 1 clean sheet in 18 as well. I'm not shocked at Plymouth, if I'm being honest.
No, I'm not. And you've got to account for, obviously, the loan players that they lost in January as well, particularly Finnazaz. He was a huge loss. His link-up play with Morgan Whittaker was so influential. And Morgan Whittaker's gone right off the boil. And as I say, I was at the Plymouth Wednesday game on Tuesday, and Morgan Whittaker was pretty anonymous for the most part, very, very quiet. But we're almost, in a way, sort of seeing a situation develop at Plymouth similarly to the one we saw not that long ago at Sunderland, in the sense there's a lot of discontent from the fan base towards the manager, where they don't like his attitude, they don't like the way he's saying things in the media. So Ian Foster, in that sense, he's gone in there where a club was sort of hand in hand, fans and manager, players and everything, whereas now there's a real sort of line of red tape between them where there's discontent, there's anger. A lot of Plymouth fans on Tuesday night on social media after the game were absolutely screaming at the club, basically, to get rid of him, to pull the trigger. Still very, very early in his management career, let's be honest.
Not very Plymouth to do that, though, is it?
It isn't. They like to go long-term. They like to think long-term. They set out a 5-year plan to stabilise and eventually then kick on in the Championship, look at a playoff run. But Plymouth fans are obviously, they're obviously worried. They are. On the flip side of Plymouth's argument, if they do stay up, however they do it, that will still resemble a success, particularly when you account they lost the manager that did a marvellous job getting them promoted last season, got them playing some good football at this level, and of course lost a lot of their star loanees in the January window to other clubs, with either being recalled and then sold elsewhere. So agreed. I certainly think Plymouth are in a position where they've got to be very, very mindful. Like we've said earlier on, Sheffield Wednesday play first this weekend. They're 23rd at the minute. They could go up on Plymouth on Friday night with a win. Plymouth are 16th, which just proves how mental it could be this weekend coming. So I think anybody within this sort of team of 7 or 8 bracket could easily go down. Nothing's a given in this league. Who thought a couple of weeks ago Millwall are going to Southampton and win? Nobody. Who thought QPR would go to Leicester and win? Nobody. So it just goes to show anything can happen. And as is so often the case with the Easter weekend, sort of 2 or 3 weeks away now, that's a big weekend where you always get a couple of surprise results. Anything can happen. So I think just looking slightly further above this crop of teams that are sort of definitely in this mix compared to those that are looking to escape it, I think the biggest winners in recent weeks have been Swansea, to be fair. They've taken 7 points in the last 3 games.
I was worried about Swansea before they went and won it.
They've just clicked a little bit, haven't they? They've clicked ever so slightly. They obviously won at Sunderland, beat Blackburn and got a point away at Watford. on Wednesday night. Watford are another team that are on the slide.
If we're going to talk about the Watford game, can we just take a moment to appreciate the own goal by Ryan Andrews?
I don't think he'll like you mentioning that, but yes, it was quite comical.
Absolutely.
He'll not want to see that one again. He won't want to see that one again.
I mean, you say that. It's completely on the goalkeeper. Like, why is he coming out in that situation? And why is he not absolutely screaming at the defender that he is on his way, if that is the case? So it's definitely not Ryan Andrews' fault. It's terrible, terrible goalkeeping. Let's quickly have a look at the battle for the top six then, George, as well. We've spoken about West Brom drawing with QPR, Hull City drawing with Birmingham. And then, of course, you've got Coventry's big, big win against Rotherham United. Preston didn't get the opportunity to play at Southampton. And Norwich lost at Middlesbrough. Norwich, if they don't finish in the top six, I think it's that away form that's going to really undermine them, because they've struggled. They've been really good at Carrow Road, which is beggar's belief. I cannot believe, considering where Blackburn was seventh when they won at Norwich back in the start of November, and how bad Norwich were. I can't believe where the two teams are now. It's absolutely astounding. But they lost at Middlesbrough. A red card for Borja Sainz, very much the turning point in this game. They were winning 1-0 thanks to Ashley Barnes. Middlesbrough then responded and have not been in good form of late, so we're under pressure. Goals from Force, Latty Laugh, got them the win 3-1. So from my sort of reckoning, George, I think it kind of feels like five teams into two places now a little bit with the points difference. I think you've got West Brom and Hull in the driving seat, but then you've got Coventry, Preston and Norwich on their coattails. I'm going to say it. I think there are three teams in the Championship that don't have anything to play for anymore, and that is Sunderland, Cardiff and Middlesbrough. I think they are potentially the first three teams that are stuck in mid-table. They're not going to go down. They're not going to get in the playoffs unless they go on a remarkable run, which I'm not sure any of them are capable of at this stage, particularly when you consider Sunderland have got no Jack Clark or permanent manager. Middlesbrough have not been consistent enough all season, and Cardiff are just not good enough for a top six push, in my opinion. So I think those three, I'm saying they're in mid-table obscurity now, and I'm looking at five into two, I think, with West Brom and Hull in the driving seat.
Yeah, I think I'd have to agree with that, to be fair. I think West Brom, they've been in fifth place for as long as I can remember now. They've occupied that spot for pretty much all season, really. They've probably been there since late September, off the top of my head. And I think it's a position that they will deserve to achieve, because they've been pretty good all season, West Brom. They've had little ups and downs here and there, but on the whole, they've been very, very consistent. And I think I must add, though, I know we mentioned the QPR game earlier on, but Mikey Johnston, he has been a remarkable pickup on loan from Celtic. I watched the game between West Brom and Coventry last Friday night, and obviously he scored in that game. He scored again on Wednesday night at QPR. He just looks a really, really good player. And at first, when I first sort of heard about him, I thought, where's he come from? And obviously looked into it, saw he come from Celtic, and I thought, they must have some good players in the Scottish Premiership. That's all I can say, because this kid looks the real deal. He looks a talent, doesn't he? He looks really, really good.
The Scottish Premiership, renowned for its deep levels of quality.
Yeah, absolutely. But as the rest of this top six battle, I mean, Hull City have obviously, for me, got the biggest load of pressure on their shoulders because of the quality that they've got, the amount of money that they've spent to get themselves into this position. I still think Hull will fancy their chances. They had a good run not long ago, stringing, was it four or five wins in a row? Birmingham at home, that's a bit of a setback. That's one of those games they will have put a ring around and sort of said, we've got to win this one. This has got to be 3 points. And obviously they didn't manage to achieve it. Norwich, they'll be kicking themselves that they didn't capitalise on that with that trip to Middlesbrough. David Wagner, by the way, never beaten Middlesbrough in his managerial career. Five games played, five games lost. It seems to be a bit of a hoodoo for him playing Borough. So obviously the red card had a major impact in that game. Borja Sainz getting sent off after Ashley Barnes scored one of the greatest goals you're ever likely to see. I think we can all agree. Norwich, like you say, home form, you can't discount them on that, and they're still only 2 points behind Hull. They're only five behind West Bromwich Albion, so it's not impossible that they could even catch the baggies. But this sixth place battle, for me, I think there's four teams contesting this final playoff spot. I'm still sticking to my guns that West Brom will get fifth. I think they deserve to finish fifth. They've been in there all season long. They do deserve it. So obviously it's not sort of set in stone they're going to get that, but I think it's looking more and more likely because there's not really anybody behind them at this point that's sort of stringing a run together of 4 or 5 wins in a row. Preston, obviously, been in good form of late, to be fair to them. Didn't get the chance to play in midweek. Got a draw against Hull last weekend after that win at Coventry the week before, which was really, really impressive. So they've sort of played the teams in and around them of late, Preston, and they've taken a decent amount of points off them as well. And then, obviously, Coventry, a big, big morale-boosting victory in the week, one that I'm sure everybody expects them to get. Obviously, beat Rotherham with ease, winning 5-0. They needed that because they'd hit the buffers a little bit. Obviously, losing at West Brom, they lost 3-0 to Preston that game I've just mentioned there. So they needed that. But I still think they could easily be a team that sort of put 4 or 5 wins together out of this 4 or 5 clubs. It's really hard to say because I think each team will fancy their chances. That's the thing. I don't think there's a clear favourite, whereas last year I was sort of drawn towards Coventry. Sunderland were really, really good with the technical ability of Ahmad and 1 or 2 others in there. Hull obviously have got the flair players, the big name stars, if you like. Norwich have got the goal scorer in Josh Sargent.
Hull probably feel like Sunderland of last year a little bit with the technical quality they've got in attack, I would argue.
Yeah, but probably with a bit of an extra sense of pressure, I think, for the amount of money that they've spent,
the quality they've got, the money they've invested.
I think Coventry, obviously, a team that obviously have done remarkably well over the last few years. There's a bit of an expectation there this time after coming so close last year.
I worry about Coventry's depth a little bit because they've obviously lost Sakamoto for the season, and from a tactical point of view, was really important for them playing 4-3-3. They've gone back to a back three in the last few games, and they might have to play that between now and the end of the season. I do think they do miss something without him. That squad is a little bit unbalanced to play 4-3-3 in terms of the wide forwards without Sakamoto.
Yeah, I would agree with that. He's a huge loss. I've been very, very impressed by him this season. He's, for me, been one of the finds of the season. Really, really understated, underrated player for sort of the rest of the league. Coventry fans aside, of course, see him every week. But I think in terms of this race, seemingly 4th, 6th spot, we're sort of pinning our hats on, saying it's a four-way battle for this 6th place. Obviously, they're coming from the deepest position, albeit a point behind Coventry, 2 points behind Norwich, so you're not exactly a million miles. But I think there's the least amount of pressure on Preston because they've come from a position which nobody really expected. They weren't certainly in the wider landscape of the league expected to challenge for the top 6 this year. And obviously a lot of Preston fans have obviously been eager to see them make that next step in recent years, which is fully understandable and fully respectable. But I think Preston, obviously, for the position they were in, obviously a lot of discontent towards Ryan Lowe not all that long ago. They've found a little bit of form, a bit of momentum, and now they're only 4 points behind Hull City. So they've got a game in hand as well, let's not forget, albeit a very difficult one away at Southampton. But they'll fancy the chances, and maybe, just maybe, with the pressure not being on them, it might work to their advantage. We shall see. But I think I agree with you on the point that it's probably, as things stand, only really Cardiff, Sunderland and Middlesbrough that have got nothing to play for. But it just seems absolutely bonkers to believe that, say, Sheffield Wednesday, Stoke, Huddersfield all get wins this weekend, climb up to 41 points. They're only 6 points behind Sunderland at 11th if Sunderland lose. This league is absolutely insane. So I think I would argue in the sense that there might only be a couple of teams that are going to be okay. But even though you sense that, I still don't think you can say they're definitely going to be okay. You could certainly see as high as Watford, maybe even Middlesbrough as well, Sunderland getting dragged into it if they don't sort of find a couple of wins themselves, because the teams at the bottom, such as Wednesday, QPR, Millwall to an extent, they're now finding a little bit of momentum now, whereas others are stuttering. But like I said earlier on, there is absolutely no guarantees in this league, as it's proven in the last 2 or 3 weekends. There is nothing you can sort of, that will definitely happen. Leeds at home to Stoke the other night, you probably would have thought that'd be a comfortable 3 or 4 nil win. They got it done by 1 goal. This stage of the season, absolutely anything can happen. So I really wouldn't like to say, you can't decide who's going to win the league. You can't decide who's going to get in the playoffs in what order. I think the only thing with 10 games to go that you can all sort of say that will 100% happen is Rotherham finishing bottom. I think that is the only thing at this stage that we can say that is done. that will happen. Honestly, this league, it's absolutely mental, but I won't change it for the world. It's bloody brilliant, isn't it?
And what a lovely way to end this week's podcast. Thank you for listening, as always. And make sure you are subscribed to this podcast feed wherever you get your podcast from. And follow us on Twitter at ChampChatPod24. As I say, we're getting to the good bit now, so make sure you are following us on social media platforms. Make sure you subscribe and you will not miss a second of the action in this running for the championship season. A huge thank you again to our sponsors, Cars Accepted, for their support this season. If you're looking to take car payments with no contract or monthly fees, make sure you check them out at carsaccepted.co.uk. Thank you for listening, and we'll catch you again next week for another episode of the Championship Chat Podcast.
This is the Championship Chat Podcast, your home of news, views, and debate from England's second tier.